Welcome to The Lob by These Football Times, the home of long-form storytelling online. Let us loop you through the ages of football. So sit back, learn, and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to The Lob Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Hart, from These Football Times. This week, we're going to be talking to an American football legend about the subject of the change at the U.S. men's national team head coach level. Out with the old and in with the new. Or is it meet the old boss, same as the new boss? Or something like that. Joining us this week, along with my longtime favorite co-host, Mr. John Townsend, who is also a senior writer here at These Football Times, is a former U.S. men's national team player and also U-17 coach for the U.S. National team, the men's under-17. Also a coach with Major League Soccer, who now runs a youth team in Charlotte, North Carolina, Mr. Eric Immler. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you, Jess. Good to be back on with you.
And John, welcome once again. How are you doing? How was your Thanksgiving?
I am paying the price for travel and indulging over Thanksgiving, but I'm well. How are you doing?
Well, I'm about 5 or 6 pounds heavier after eating like a swine over Thanksgiving. But other than that, I'm doing great. Off to London for the awards with Andrew Flint next week. I hope everyone voted for Andrew for Writer of the Year.
I certainly did.
Excellent. So let's kick this thing off with you, Eric. What are your general thoughts after digesting this move for about, I guess, 10 days now? I know you know both Klinsmann and Bruce Arena. You probably know Bruce quite a bit better. But why don't you give us some general thoughts on the change?
I think Bruce is the right call. I think Klinsmann came in with a lot of ideas that he wanted to get across, and I think we all view his tenure over the course of a little over 5 years as unsuccessful. I think he was saying a lot of things that we all felt, and we probably, a lot of us, agreed with some of the big changes and the sweeping changes he wanted to make at many different levels within U.S. soccer, whether it was the style of play or the way we approached the game, the way we looked at the game, both on and off the field, all the way down to youth development. I think a lot of the ideas were, I think if we looked at his press conference in the early days, we would say, yes, you know, we agree with this. Yes. Check that box. Yes. Agree. And now it comes down to the implementation and how it ultimately played out over the course of 5 years. And I think at the end of 5 years, we look at it and say it was more talk than anything. How much really changed? I think with Bruce, I look at it and say it's a no-lose situation for him, right? He can come in and rally the support of the players and get the locker room back and get those guys playing without possibly changing the lineup too much, or he inserts a couple guys that he feels were not given a fair shake by Klinsmann, and they come in and they perform admirably, and now you've kickstarted a young player's career with the national team. I believe he will get us to qualify. I believe he will get us to the World Cup, and he will have his say as his final swan song with the U.S. national team. That's the way I see it. Knowing Bruce, I think he's gladly accepting the challenge, and I believe that he thinks he can do it, or he wouldn't have accepted the job. And I believe that he's going to come in and he's going to do what's necessary to get us to where we need to be, and all will be rosy in his world.
So, John, What about these controversial statements that Bruce has made in the past about foreign-born players playing on the American side?
I think regarding those statements, I think a lot of that was taken in snippets, and whether it's in the right context, out of context, I think I read them at first, like everyone else did, and was completely kind of caught off guard because I hadn't seen those comments in many years. Because I think he had said them when, you know, he obviously wasn't the national team coach. And I think a lot of that was maybe a swipe at what Klinsmann was bringing in from the dual national side. And maybe he didn't see the heart and the commitment and all the things that, you know, U.S. men's national team soccer through the program, through all the residency, through everything is kind of known for. People hadn't seen that. And I think that maybe was a swipe at Klinsmann's selections, his comments himself. I don't agree with the sentiment that you have to be this, born and bred in the U.S. to be an American. But he's gone back and he's had to re-clarify his statements. And I agree with what he said. I think initially, though, if you take the actual interview with Alexi Lalas, he does say it's a ridiculous notion to say that, you know, we can't have dual nationals. And if you're an American holding a passport, all I ask is that you give everything when you put that kid on and you play for our country and you know, good or bad, you give it all. And I think under Klinsmann, my big major concern was I started to see this staleness and apathy coming from both dual nationals and players who were born and raised here. I saw this malaise kind of come over the program. I don't know if that's, more of a cultural thing, more generational thing. I think that's a testy subject, Jim. I really don't agree with anyone. I mean, I don't agree with Abby Wambach's comments. I think if that's where we're, really going to, go with these nationalism type things, I don't agree with what she said. I think Bruce has done a good job to kind of re-clarify those things. And it's, before he even takes charge of a game or the January camp, I think that's a good conversation to have with not only his, his players and the player pool, but the media as well.
So when you were playing, Eric, was that an issue at all?
No. No, that wasn't an issue at all. We weren't dealing with any of that.
So what's your feeling on that subject now?
I think when we look at the national team, yeah, would we like to see all American born and bred players in the lineup? For sure. But if somebody holds an American passport and wants to play for the United States, just give us everything you got, like John said. That's all I ask.
Sure. And one of the things I think that distressed me about a little bit about Jurgen's role within U.S. soccer was his dual role as technical director. And I know you and I have spoken at length about this, Eric, and I know you have an opinion on this. I think that may have been one of the biggest reasons that Jurgen was seen as, within the coaching community at least, as less of a leader, and perhaps caused more controversy within the soccer community itself within this country. What are your opinions on that?
Well, I mean, look, I'm a little distanced from it, Jim, but, I've never understood what his role of technical director actually means. So therefore, I don't know how to rate the job he does or doesn't do. All I know is that we've been dealing down here in the trenches of youth soccer. We've been dealing with these rolling changes of U.S. soccer. Yet, who do we turn to for clarity? Who do we turn to for an explanation? Is it the technical director? Who's making these changes? Is it Klinsmann as the technical director, or is it someone else? Is it somebody that Klinsmann has appointed, or is Klinsmann kind of left out of it? Is it a conversation that Klinsmann's been having for 3, 4, 5 years, and then it gets enforced by U.S. Soccer, then once it's enforced, who is the person at U.S. Soccer that we turn to? You know, we might not be able to go to that specific person for an answer or for clarification, but I don't understand how the structure works. Therefore, when you say technical director, that doesn't mean anything to me. I don't even know what that means. You know, what is his role in assignment? What is the job description of a technical director of U.S. Soccer? What does that mean? So I don't put any value in it, other than it probably jacked up his salary. But what did he do? What did he do with that? What was expected of him? I have no idea.
Well, clearly there were a lot of changes in the last 5 years within the rules around U.S. or youth soccer.
That part, yes. But did that come from our technical director, or was that from U.S. Soccer? Does it matter? I don't know. You know, but I would have liked to have known, is this Jurgen Klinsmann trying to Europeanize, you know, our youth system? What was the directive behind doing it? Other than we need to be on the calendar of the rest of the world. You know, that's the only explanation I got with the rule, the age going back to the calendar year. You know, okay, what else? You know, these other changes. Yeah, the small-sided games thing for sure, and we understand the heading thing's all about a lawsuit. You know, but I'm going to look at Klinsmann's time here while I was excited and anticipating, you know, big things coming from him coming on board. Overall, I'm really disappointed because I feel like while he's been our national team coach, whether it was his decisions and him driving the ship, ultimately, I look at his tenure as a complete and utter failure that has cost us a lot of money. Now, I don't know if it's a lot of money to U.S. Soccer, but I know he was drawing a very big salary. You know, to take our national team program really nowhere in the grand scheme of things, you know, and has now left us with, you know, this kind of mess in youth soccer that we kind of have to figure out and adapt to on our own without a whole lot of guidance, in my opinion, from anyone. You know, for whatever reason, the heading thing came to become a mandate by U.S. Soccer. I go and I watch games that it really affects the 9s, 10s, the 11-year-olds, and it's silly the way the game is changing because of this rule. And I don't want to get into it at all, but it's just, that's how I look at his tenure. All of these changes were now enforced. And has it really made things better? Or has it made things more complicated and more difficult? And what is our direction? What is our path? Has he set us down this road that it's going to get better with these changes? If, in fact, he is the architect of these changes? Or is he a figurehead? You know, only really responsible for the first team, which I think the national team coach should just be responsible for the first team. Get us to a place. Now, you should have the autonomy to appoint a almost like an outreach group, you know, to get out into the communities and of this big country and implement what you want to get done. Now, maybe that's supposed to be done through our scouting network. I don't know. But I just don't feel like we're any further down the road. And that's frustrating. In fact, I feel like we're taking steps in the wrong direction at times.
John, I know you've been coaching a lot of youth players, you know, these last few years. You know, you've seen the same changes that Eric has. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think Eric mentioned the word mandate, which I think is a really important one to start with. You know, and at the levels that I coach and levels that I observe and train players, biggest thing I always had with these changes, wherever they came from, whether it's from Jurgen or from U.S. Soccer as a whole or from a lawsuit, I want to know who's going to enforce them, who's going to, you know, audit them, make sure that they're working after 6 months, make sure they're working after a 9-month cycle or 12 months. I never saw any of that. The other thing that I think my big gripe with this whole thing was I don't think any coach or any one person should have as much power or as much responsibility, whether they can do it or not, as Sunil Gulati gave Jurgen Klinsmann. I think he is probably the root of a lot of the issues that we've been, you know, here in the trenches, banging our heads against the walls to try to figure out, because he is the one who appointed this dual role. He is the one who didn't define this role for everyone else who coaches. We don't know what was coming down the pipeline through U.S. Soccer. He's the one who gave Jurgen a contract extension prior to the World Cup through 2018. He is the one who, for a lot of people, may not know this, who allowed Jurgen Klinsmann to kind of be in his ear during the Bob Bradley years when Bob was trying to do his job as a national team coach. He had that interim tag for a long time. And, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I believe that Sunil was a great enabler and is a great enabler, and him running unopposed is a problem for me. And I think when we look at the role, the dual role, I agree with a lot of what Eric's saying. He, you know, anyone who has this dual role can't do 100% of a job on both sides. You're going to sell something short. You're going to overextend yourself. You're not going to know what you're doing. And part of what I think Jurgen's problem was in both roles is resistance is normal for new ideas, new coaches, but these weren't new ideas. Anyone who's been around the soccer circles and played at a high level, coached at a high level, been coached by high level people has had these same rules and in discussions about what should be changed, what we need to do with the youth level, what we need to do with the state level, the regional level, all these things. And, you know, he did come in and he did try to do some of these things. But, you know, one of the things that is going to bother me, you know, going forward is I don't know that we're ever going to get the clarity we need, no matter who's in charge, because I do think Sunil has kind of left this veiled mess that we are going to have to wade through. And part of what you know, I think is positive about what, you know, Jurgen, at least if he's a figurehead, tried to do was getting the development academy to go down the, you know, U12, like getting the academy thing kind of, you know, I personally I can't understand why we would ever start an academy at the U18 U16 level in 2007. It's really hard to actually implement some of the things, but, you know, 9 years on, I think we're actually closer to where it needs to be. I don't know if that's Jurgen. I don't know if that's U.S. soccer. Again, these are the murky things that we don't know about. But overall, I'm left with more questions. And, you know, I spoke with somebody once when I was over in London, and they said that national team job might be the most challenging job in the world. Not because of the actual soccer, but the monumental shift that people are going to try to put into that position, the label of, well, now you're the national team job, you have the national team job. Do you have to change the whole system, or should you just focus on that top tier and enlist people to actually, you know, go through the processes and create the channels of communication, create the pathways for change at the younger levels, at the holistic level? No one knows, and I don't have the answers, but I certainly can say that from an outsider's perspective, when I was in London, people were looking at this national team job and saying, there's no way a Mourinho or a Guardiola or a Conte or a Klopp wants that job, because they're going to want to focus on their team. They're not going to go to a jigsaw puzzle and put it together. They're going to want to, you know, put that last piece of the puzzle in and have a product. And so I think Jurgen sold Sunil on, you know, a cure-all. And there's actually a phrase in Germany, is, you know, in English, it says, even the blind chicken will find the seed one day. You know, it's at some point you're going to hit, you know, the right keys and you're going to strike the right, you know, tones here. And he did some things, but overall, there was no chance he could ever succeed in this dual role.
Well, and that's part of it too, is if you look at the history of Jurgen Klinsmann, he was never successful as a head coach without Jurgi Love, if you really look at it. And if you read Das Reboot by Ralf Honigstein, you see plainly, you know, what are Jurgen's strengths and what are Jurgen's weaknesses. And I think that Sunil just bought into the name, and that was it. Now, looking forward with Bruce, you know, I don't think Bruce has any inkling or any motivation to bring along the youth system in this country. I think that's the last thing on his mind. This is his last gig. He's going to qualify for Russia, and he's only focused on doing well in Russia. So in order for us to move forward in the youth academy systems and youth soccer in this country, that's a huge question mark for me. What about for you, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think Bruce comes into this and it's let's get through the next 18 months. Let's get us to a point where we've got a seat at the table. And then we'll see from that point on. We'll just see how this goes. I see it going one way for Bruce, and I see that is him building confidence in the national team, excitement around the national team, him delivering us to the World Cup, and him being looked at as a hero. And then it's his call as to what he wants to do, as Sunil will come to him and say, would you like to extend your contract through the next World Cup or for another 2 years, whatever. And then he'll have the option to say yes or no. That's how I see it playing out.
But what do we do inside this country? Where do we find leadership? Where do we find guidance for, the youth players and the youth system within the country?
I don't think anything's really changed there. I don't think Bruce's appointment is going to change any of that. I shared a story with you a while ago, when I left the college game and the national team and was trying to figure out what to do and was coaching youth soccer again. I said, well, look, the opportunity's right here. I'm working in it. It's with under 12s. This is where I need to be. And I had these big aspirations of changing, the youth soccer landscape in some way, shape, or form. Didn't know how. But that was my passion. That was my drive. And now I'm 2-3 years into that and, of being down at this U-12 level. And, I look at it and say, look, if I can have an impact on a group of, 50 players and 50 families, then I feel like I've done a great job. If I can look at a majority of my under 10s that move on to U-11s and continue playing in our club and continue enjoying a game, well, yeah, I've had massive success. And that's kind of what I resigned myself to. I just need to do a good job in my own little town. And if I can do that, then I'm part of this cause that we've got going forward. I just look at you got the youth academies going, and that's great. Let them continue to do what they do. But I'm getting ready to go to Sarasota in 2 or 3 days. And I'm going to go down there. And what am I expecting to see in the youth academy games? Yeah, some good ideas, some kids that can play. But for the most part, it's going to be a lot of frustration in what I see, I'm sure. Just because it's going to, it's going to be a lot of athleticism. It's going to be ideas that aren't quite carried out and it doesn't quite happen. And this is at the U16, U17, U18 level where, I guess I would hope it would look a little bit better. So I know I'm not answering the question, but I just feel like there's no real easy solution. We've got all of these things that if you look at over the past 8-10 years, things have become a whole lot more formalized and, there's a whole lot more discussion about youth development in this country. And I think that's fantastic. It's great. I love being a part of that movement. Sometimes I sit back and I say, we just have to kind of take a step back and say less. And I shared with you a story, Jim, earlier about my son. My son would always say he wants to be a soccer player. He's an under 12 this year. And I always felt like I was the one pulling him along and saying, hey, let's watch this. Let's go do this. Who's going to be your team? Let's play a little bit. Let's work on this. And He just didn't want anything to do with it. And it just seems like in this past fall season, he's kind of come to life a little bit in what he wants to do. For example, he could have watched the Carolina Panthers lose to the Raiders last night on TV. Yesterday was a day of getting the Christmas tree out and the decorations and all that. He could have been heavily involved in that. He could have disappeared upstairs to watch one of his shows, whatever it was. But what did he choose to do? He came down to watch Colorado-Seattle with me the last 20 minutes. And he was asking questions. I stepped out of the room. Jordan Moore scored the goal. He explained it to me. It's just stuff like that I think he's starting to get the bug. He wants three jerseys for Christmas. I mean, I don't know what that's all about. You know, is it his environment that's, you know, turning the screws on him big time about, hey, you got to do this and you got to do this and you got to spend this much time and you got to go to this and do that. No, it's just his local team that he's playing for. They train twice a week and, you know, they play a game on the weekend and he's having a blast. And I've kind of taken a role of stepping away from it and saying, look, I'm going to get you there and I'm going to bring you home and I'll be the transport, but I'm just going to kind of back away. So I have to look at that and say that's a positive and just hope for the best in terms of his future. What it's going to be, I've got no idea. Does that make any sense?
It does. As long as one of those jerseys is a Chelsea jersey, sure.
That will not be allowed, Jim. I'm playing the role of Santa Claus. It will not be royal blue. It will not be royal blue. It will be. It will have a lot of red in it.
Got it. So, John, let's bring you back into this because there's a lot there and what I heard was a lot of frustration actually coming from Eric about sort of being in the wilderness is what it sounded like to me. And I've heard the same thing when I talk to you, John, and you're, you know, 1,000 miles away from Eric.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to get back to, you know, some of the best coaches I have, some of the best coaches I work with, they always go back to this one word, which is simplicity or being simple. We can even, you know, strip it down even more. And, you know, I think with the state of the national game, not even the program, just soccer in this country, I think it's as popular as it's ever been. I think it's accessible as it's ever been. And I think there's a generation of former high-level players that are now coaching, that are now having children of their own. I think everything is set up for it to be, you know, better going forward. But I still see a lack of – there's a certain element that, you know, Eric touched on in the mid-'80s and the early 90s, that when I was a little guy kicking around that I experienced as well is this, you know, get outside and play for the fun of it. Don't have so much organizational pressure from parents and all this other stuff. You go out and play. And I think one of the things that we look at the last 5 years under Klinsmann, and I'm not even going to give this too much oxygen, but we didn't see a lot of grassroots emphasis or involvement. There was no plan to say, hey, you know what, let's build 50 soccer cages in, you know, one in each state or something. We didn't see anything like that. We didn't see this. And maybe that's not, wasn't his job. Maybe that's not what U.S. soccer cares about, and that's fine. But I think we are still going to have these systemic issues until we can solve this one part of the problem, which anyone who's gone overseas, anyone who's played in good communities with good soccer knows that the game exists outside of the white lines. The game exists on the street. The game exists on the park. And I don't know if I went up to a kid today and said, hey, do you know what jumpers for goalposts means? They wouldn't know what that means. And maybe some kids would, and I'm hoping that there's a generation of young players like Eric's son who will find the game for themselves and demand more from their coaches and parents and from their peers. I don't think we're there yet. I think that there's still plenty of elements that are going on. But until we actually have a federation that gives more effort and more energy at the grassroots level, we will never have national team caliber players that they want. we can say all we want, we're going to get the outliers, but until we solve that game at this, you know, U12 and below level, we can't expect for dramatic changes going forward. And I don't know that that's the responsibility of any one person. And, you know, this is me venting about Sunil again. This is not, you know, a type of thing where Bruce Arena should concentrate on anything but that senior team qualifying and making it the best product he has. But it, the challenge is out there for other elements and other people and little fiefdoms all over the country to come together and say, you know, let's solve this from the ground up. I know so many good coaches. I use it a ton, this stupid analogy of we don't build houses starting with the roof. Well, in U.S. soccer, we do. In American soccer, we do. And I don't know why, but, you know, one of the things that I've always reminded of is, you know, Terry Mickler says this all the time. Well, what happens when, you know, you can build a house starting with the roof and you can build a great house. What happens when a storm comes? There's no foundation. It's gone. You got to start over again. And I think we keep doing that. And you know, for me, you know, the kids that I train, the young teams that I work with and the coaches that I know, they all have different goals, and that's fine. But I still think we're ignoring, you know, some of these things that we grew up with. And this organic way of looking at the game in a simplistic way, we're still not there. We are really not there. And again, I think a lot of it's force. I think a lot of it is we are trying to get from point A to, you know, point B way too quickly. And we're not giving the program or the game enough time to, you know, find its way. One thing that I will mention, though, is Klinsmann, the one really good thing I think he did was he brought the discussions that every serious soccer purist has had for years, going back decades in this country, brought it to a national level with the media, and a media who doesn't understand some of these issues, a media that is still ignorant in its own right. He criticized and attacked some of the things that Americans attack. We don't like certain elements. We don't like certain mandates. We don't like certain systems. He did it looking down his nose and did it from a, you know, tried maybe a copy and paste method from Germany that will not work here. But I think the discussions being taking place, the debates happening, the conversations that have evolved, and maybe one or two communities have solved some problems where they wouldn't have before because they didn't know it was an issue. Things like that, I think, are important to have. And I think, you know, Klinsmann did bring an element of criticism that, you know, in doses is healthy. You know, I think Americans tend to look at, for years, anyone who attacked soccer or criticized soccer was seen as an attack. And here was a guy who, you know, won a World Cup as a player, had some success with the German national team, you know, had been around a good system for a very, very long time. You know, he was just taking shots from, you know, from wherever at our system. And some of that was okay. You know, some of it was valid. But to not see it through or to not really, you know, we don't know these answers yet. We might not know for another 10 years. We might take this generation who's just entering the development academy system to come to fruition for us to even know if any of it's working. We don't know yet. But I think those types of debates need to keep happening.
Yeah, most definitely. I do think the one thing about Jurgen Klinsmann that he was right was that players need to play at the highest level that they can play at. You know, and I think the attitude that the players have to, you know, play within their home country league, I think that's, you know, I don't think there's any reason that they have to do that. You know, no other country in the world says you must play in your home country league to be, you know, on the national team. You know,
well, the death knell for Klinsmann, I think, was going to war with Major League Soccer. I think that was the turning point. October of 2 years ago, he went, you know, he had it out with, you know, Don Garber and some of the powers that be. And, you know, and I think that immediately put the media, the fans, it divided more than united. And I think he might have been right. I think he was right about some of those things. But he didn't help himself or wasn't ever going to get that help, you know, going forward. And I think that's a real interesting time in his tenure was, you know, he did point out some things about Major League Soccer that are issues. You know, the league was designed for the American player. And I look at the rosters and, you know, 45% of the players in Major League Soccer are American. That means the majority aren't. there's something going on with that that should not be an issue. It should be for the American player. And the fact that some of his marquee national team players came back from Europe to sign designated player contracts in Major League Soccer, it irked him. You know, whether their performance dipped, I think it did. I don't know, you know, that's just my opinion, but I think that was the death knell of his tenure when he decided to say what he said and MLS reacted the way it did in the media. You know, all of a sudden it was knives out. And I think that there's no recovery from that. I think he should have been looking to, you know, build more bridges instead of burn them. But he was obviously empowered by dual role, by this great salary he had, and, you know, the stability that Sunil had given him, that I think he got away with it. And I think now, like Erica said, we have this rubble to kind of clean up, and I don't know that we're any farther along, but it did divide more than unite.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But so on to the next subject. You know, one of the issues that I continue to read about, and it was brought up in The Guardian overnight, was the possibility that we could bring some change into U.S. soccer with more inclusion of other communities within the country. You know, U.S. soccer today and the youth system in particular, the academy system, is definitely seen as a middle to upper middle class divide, I guess you'd say, in that, you know, soccer is an expensive sport to play in this country where, you know, those barriers don't exist in other countries. Any thoughts on that, Eric? Any chance of that?
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've been talking about it for years and years and years about how many, I don't think anybody denies the fact that there are good players within our borders. You know, but there's a reason that I want to take every single one of the players I touch and enter them into a Hispanic league. You know, because I feel like that's going to give them an education that they haven't seen. You're going to find players there that are like, where have you been hiding? They can't afford to play in our expensive sport, you know? So, yeah, I definitely think that is a massive issue, but one that we're not going to solve. I think a bigger focus has to be on, and I don't want to redirect the question at all, but, you know, I think that we still need to focus on developing better coaching, you know, better quality coaches. And not to say that we don't have a ton of good ones. We do. But I think, you know, the problem I continue to have in my little community is I am trying to run a program that is miles ahead of where these kids that are coming into the program have ever been. And so now it's about getting those. The only way I can get the players that I have access to further down the line for the next coach is to have more talent coming into me. And if I'm still spending a ton of time on how a player's technique of passing and trapping has to improve for them to survive in my program, well, that's my starting point. But if they can come to me with a decent idea of how to pass and trap a soccer ball, then I can maybe take them a step or two further down the line in a 1 or 2 year period and give that U11 coach or that U12 coach something more to deal with. And now that's called talent development. That's called development. But if we're constantly having to deal with that volunteer recreational coach that all he cares about is winning on a Saturday and doesn't care how he does it, and neither do the parents on the other side of the field, you know, we're going to be in this dilemma, right? And it doesn't matter how good I might be or you might be or whoever might be at that next age group, you've got to deal with what your player pool presents to you. Similar to the national team comment or dilemma, right? Bruce can only deal with the pool of players he has access to. So the better the pool can be, the more talent we can push up the line and the more fruit that we'll bear, you know, at maturity. So I really want the focus to be on how do we develop better coaches at the youngest age groups and get these players into environments that are positive for a longer period of time. And let's chip away at the dropout rate at 13, 14 years old. If we can do that, yeah, we still got to come up with a solution of how we make it more affordable for these good players in these pockets to play. I'm hoping that at some point in time we have really affordable coaching courses where, you know, I don't have to pull teeth to get a coach who might have a glimmer in his eye about wanting to be a better coach and sending him to a coaching course without breaking the bank. You know, that to me is where I would like to see the biggest emphasis. But right now, you know, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg, and you're going to have to, oh, by the way, take your 2 weeks vacation in order to take a coaching course.
Once again, it's
sorry, back. I got a soft course there.
No, once again, it's back to culture, though. I mean, that's part of the American culture, too, right? Which is the parents don't have the time off to dedicate, you know, the adults don't have the time off to dedicate to the coaching courses either, and the courses are for profit, therefore they're expensive.
So going back to the question before this one, which John went, was talking about, you know, what I would love to know is it seems to me that U.S. soccer is, is doing all right as a business, right? There's plenty of money in the coffers of U.S. soccer. And while U.S. soccer, I'm sure, does a lot of really, really good things, I would like to see them step out on a platform to say, we are going to seriously emphasize youth development, and this is how we're going to do it. These are our initiatives. This is what we're going to do to further the game. Not rule changes, but initiatives that cost money. Like, I would like the governing body to turn the spotlight on under 10, under 12 youth development and how we're going to do it. Yes, I know we have these re-engineered coaching courses, and I'm sure it's got a lot of good information. But how are we going to immediately impact what's going on at the youngest age groups? That's what I would love to be. That's the news I would love to hear. And I just don't know that's a real emphasis of U.S. soccer right now. Like, have we made the identification that the future success, and John, you touched on this earlier, the future success of our senior team is in the hands of our 8 and 9 year olds. You know, and we just have to be patient and understand that it's not going to come with the hiring of Bruce Arena. It's going to be, what does our national team look like in 2030? You know, and that's a time that I can't wait to get to, because I want to be a part of that process. I want to develop players for the future. Now, let's identify what we want it to look like, and let's get as many of us to identify with what that's supposed to look like, and let's have the proper coaching in place to get them to that point. And some might argue that we've already got that in place and we're already going down that road. I don't necessarily agree.
What do you think about that, John?
I think he's 100% correct. I think going forward, you know, for me, it all happens at the community level. I mean, I'm excited for the same age groups Eric mentioned, because they are going to be players that have been exclusively, hopefully, coached by a more knowledgeable parent, a more knowledgeable coach, a more knowledgeable former player. I think I would have killed for some of the access. And Eric and Jim, I know you guys would. I can't even complain because I'm younger than you both. But I mean, some of the things that players can access today for training on their own and for inspiration and for motivation and discipline, you know, it's at the reach of, you know, their fingertips. I had to, you know, sneak into the Italian bar down the street to watch the Serie A game on Rye in Italian. Maybe my parents might buy me an English game, you know, on pay-per-view once a year. It wasn't accessible. So I think, you know, for me, I'm excited to see what is going to happen going forward. But I think we need to, as a country, and I know this isn't something anyone on this podcast is going to be able to fix, but we need our fans to be more educated as well. We need them to hold, you know, higher expectations and educate themselves in terms of, you know, how do we affect change at the community level? How do we get players to, you know, look up? And, you know, I think one of the first podcasts, Eric, you were on, you said, you know, nothing's ever going to change until we can start seeing, you know, a stadium, you know, kids can dream of looking at a stadium for soccer down the street, you know, until we can actually build these soccer communities and really, really emphasize some of the development. I think we are going to look at the size of our country, the diversity and all that, as a hindrance instead of a help. And I went on a tear not too long ago about, you know, I would like to re-implement some of the, I know it's here below the development academy level, you know, call it ODP, call it the state level, but I would love to see more emphasis on a second tier academy system where it's more accessible, more affordable. Maybe there's, instead of two national training centers, maybe we have 30, 40, I don't know. We already have a pay-to-play system. We already have, you know, participant-funded system. The money is there. We just need to allocate to the right resources and start building, you know, a culture where, you know, the best in each state, you know, can begin to, you know, play within the region, get back to that system again, you know. And I know ODP has got a lot of things wrong with it. I know that this isn't an answer. I'm broad brushing, but I really think that until we localize it and make the community stronger within the sport, we produce better people and better players, we are still going to have the same pitfalls that we've seen in the past. But the biggest thing that we need to go, you know, going forward, we need to really think about is, we can't put all of this on Bruce Arena. We can't put all this on Sunil. We need to do this as a community of coaches and fans and, you know, writers and all the people who are invested in this game at an emotional and professional level. We need to demand better from, you know, our peers. And I think part of that process is identifying what the goals are, like Eric said, having a plan, having a tangible plan with some accountability. No, not just lip service and saying we need to do this, do that. It's easy to say those things. The Federation needs to really, really get in charge and lead the way and bring all the estuaries of the sport together. And until that happens, I really think that we are going to have to, you know, put it on our own shoulders to, you know, bring a player or two through, and hopefully they can reach whatever their goals may be. Maybe their goal is just playing. That's fine. But we need to redefine what it means to, you know, be a power in the sport. And I think we're not there yet. I think the soonest we can be there, you know, 2020, 2024, you know, 2030, I think that's the generation. I don't think that we're close right now. But, you know, as it stands, I think guys like Eric and, you know, they're doing the right things. They're in the trenches. They're talking about these things. And hopefully this resonates with the Scott soccer community as a whole.
So what do you think it takes? Do you think it takes a Coca-Cola or a giant corporation to get involved in this, to say, okay, we put this plan together and you know, the FA gets behind it and this giant corporation gives, you know, $1 billion and everybody has jerseys and kit with the corporate logo
well,
on it?
Just backtrack right there, Jim. Just imagine if we had corporate money coming into it, and the easy fix would be if that corporate money were there as sponsorship dollars. Imagine if that could, there could be a scholarship fund and that money be funded to you know, say the cost and the price of these coaching courses didn't change at all. But now we have these scholarship funds. So now an up-and-coming coach or a really energized coach who wants to learn can go out and learn and not break the bank. You know, imagine what would happen then. You know, there are a lot of coaches that I talk to that, you know, in that conversation, they're pretty excited about coaching. But then when you start to talk about going to get a license, you know, then it goes dark. You know, then the wall goes up, and then it's, no, I'm not going to do that, cost too much, or, you know, I can't take the time off, or whatever. Just imagine if it were more affordable. Then we'd be more likely to have more coaches involved in the process. And I'm just guessing that we'd produce more coaches, at least with a baseline of information. But imagine if we could get more coaches into the lower level coaching courses. And I know some of them are pennies right now, like, it, you know, you can take online, you know, for a couple bucks. You know, that part's great. But what about the kind of the practical ones where you got to go on and coach and have a session evaluated and write up a plan and actually learn over a 2-3 day, maybe even a week period? You know, that's I love coaching courses because I make friends. You know, friends for a long, long time, and you bounce around and you see those people over the long term, and you're learning along the way. But God, just imagine if more people had more access to coaching courses and they were more affordable, then the odds go up.
There's no doubt
in here.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, I've said it before, but you know, I've spent a lot of time with the Icelandic FA, and you know, they've got UEFA A and B coaches down at the, you know, 5 and 6 and 8 year old level, because, you know, the FA supports them and pays for their coaching, and they give the children of Iceland every opportunity to, you know, to do that. Now, that's a small nation and it's hard to replicate, but, you know, there has to be a method. I agree with you 100%. It can't be people paying out of their own pocket without the FA's help.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a nation like China, you know, and I'm not going to pretend like I know exactly what's going on. But sense I got is that the government's behind an academic soccer push in that nation, where the government is funding a lot of these youth programs, and they're saying, look, we want to produce soccer players. We understand that it's a process. We are going to put government money behind our youth programs, and in the long term, we hope to produce young soccer, we hope to become a young soccer nation. You know, whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. Somebody knows more about it than I do, but that's the sense I get. That's the sense of the movement I get that's going on in China. And I'm very curious to what that looks like in 20 years. You know, when you've got this government money behind what you're trying to do and a vision of where you want to try and go. I'm just curious to see what happens.
I'm very curious about China myself, actually, in the future. You know, I know that the premier is very interested in soccer and has a big push. So, you know, political winds change there, but I am very curious to see what it's like in 20 years. You know, it's gone fast. We're coming close to the end here. So I'm going to turn to John for some final thoughts here. What do you have? What do you have for us, John?
I have a couple, but you know, nothing that we haven't already. You know, we will still continue to beat this to death. But you know, we look at none of this going forward is worth much if we don't learn from the past 5 years. We don't learn from the past, you know, mistakes, successes. We don't document these things and compare going forward. Have a sense of accountability at the federation level. You know, China's a great example. I know that. This idea of corporate funding, that's huge. That has to be, you know, one avenue. Another avenue, we have to get back to you know, neighborhood leagues, you know, kids playing against kids within their own neighborhood. I'm not talking about high school. I'm talking about, you know, let's reduce the travel and the proximity of some of these things and, you know, make it at the neighborhood level. And I know that's a whole other podcast, but for me, I am convinced that if we can at least align some of these things at the community level, the rest will begin to kind of not fall into place, but it'll begin to align itself as well. And, you know, going forward, you know, I hope Bruce Arena has some of the right answers. I hope he can bring this January camp together. I hope he brings a huge player pool in, and I hope he gives guys a chance that maybe we're left out in the cold. I hope, you know, some guys that have been cozy under Jurgen can ride the pine for a bit. We can get some new blood in there. I'd like to see some changes on that level. You know, I'm really focused on having more of these conversations with guys like Eric and yourself, Jim, you know, continuing the conversation and dialogue, because we have to learn from Klinsmann's tenure, take the positive, you know, learn from the negative and forge ahead. Otherwise, you know, this is all for naught.
And besides writing for These Football Times, where else can we find you, John?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is at John, J-O-N underscore Townsend, T-O-W-N-S-E-N-D, 3. And I house a lot of my personal writing on the sport, just, you know, daily thoughts, blogs, if you will, on farpostfooty.com. I invite people to go there and leave comments, read things, share things. I'm pretty accessible on both mediums.
And Eric, any final thoughts from you, my friend?
I'll reiterate what John's talking about. I mean, and what you've been speaking about as well. It's about turning the spotlight on what's going on at the grassroots level. And, you know, until we start to put a major emphasis on what's happening there, we continue to turn in circles. You know, I think we have incredible opportunity to make some serious changes if we understand that it's all a process and we're patient. And we, you know, we somehow figure out a way to come together. We've got talent, we've got good coaching. We just need more of it. And I think over time we have everything we need right here with some fine tuning along the way for sure. You know, I like where I'm at, although I'm incredibly frustrated right now. I like being a part of the process, and I'm excited about what I'm doing in this whole thing and connecting with folks like yourself to know that, you know, other people care as much and are interested in driving this thing forward.
So where can we...
You know, once again, it just comes down, Jim, to... you know, to really paying attention to what's going on at the youngest levels. And, God, if we could get it right down here, I know we would be set up for huge success going forward. And I think we all believe that.
There's no question about that. So I love reading your website. So please pump your website and let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, a couple years ago, I started a website called can'tpasscan'tplay.com where I just talk about things that I see on a week-to-week basis and provide a little commentary. You know, what I'm always looking for is people to have an opinion and leave a comment or email me and fire something back. So that's where you can find those writings. And that's where I live on the World Wide Web.
And Eric is wonderful. So everyone should please take a moment to visit his blog. It really is worth your time. So for These Football Times, I'm Jim Hart. I want to remind everyone that we have the second issue of These Football Times, the magazine. which features both John and myself in this issue. It is on sale now at thesefootballtimes.co. You can purchase that for a mere £10, and it'll be delivered to your home shortly after Christmas. It's 124 pages, all on Calcio, the Italian game. So, once again, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, ciao.